Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. And this is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriage between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. And if you have any comments or questions or you would like to dial in to join us tonight, please get a pencil and you can write down this number. It's area code 646-716-4893. I'll give you that number again. It's area code 646-716-4893. So good evening to everyone. And Misty, how are you? Oh, that's right, Misty. You're not even on this line yet. Hold on, everybody. Here's Misty. Hi, Misty. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you tonight?
All right. I'm sorry we're having technical difficulties.
No.
Because we were so looking forward to our friend Gail coming on the show, Gail from Canada. And we thought we had everything where it would hook up right, but it didn't. But I did speak to Gail, and she was so kind in letting me know that she's more than happy to try this again. We have some technical difficulties, but we're going to work through them. So hopefully in the next week or two, you'll get to hear Gail yourself. Gail is our very dear friend in Canada, who has been a tremendous support to many of our women throughout the time of, you know, since she's been with us. And we love her. She's, like I say, one of our angels in the mist there. So we're hoping that Gail will be with us soon. We also have some other interesting speakers who will be joining our program in the next few weeks. And Carrie Blakely, the journalist, will be back with us talking more about her book. And we have some other women who are also coming on the show. Dr. Francine Barbetta will be back in the fall to talk about her book, Pebble in the Shoe. And hopefully we have some interesting programming coming up for you. Sometimes Misty and I think you get tired of hearing from us, but we keep getting emails thanking us for being there for women who are going through the situation. I know it's really difficult when you're living this life and there are so many extra issues that come up, and I can't emphasize that enough because I think that people really don't understand what we're going through, namely because it is pretty phenomenal in the sense that there's so many additional issues than over just plain divorce. And the emotional impact is really so strong. And I wanted to start tonight off with a column that someone sent me from the Huffington Post from a blogger. And I thought his story was so interesting. And if you would like a copy of this, you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And this post was sent to me by one of my gay male supporters, and he wanted me to read it. It's by a writer, Christopher Sofolo, and it says, "After the Storm, a Christian Coming Out Story." And I'm just going to read it because I think it's extremely moving, and it really has some interesting emotional impacts here that we can talk about. And it says, "Two lovers, that's how I got here. Two lovers caught up in a moment that set my life spinning in motion. You know the story, cells divide and life explodes. But before my fingernails took shape, and before the first thud of contracting muscles sent blood flowing through my veins, something else occurred, something beautiful and terrifying for the future of this still-forming child. We'll get into that in a bit. After 9 months of complete darkness, I traveled through the canal of life into the blinding light of my future. My eyes stung as they adjusted to being used for the first time. What a curious and amazing sight, all these little blurry shapes scurrying about. I was confused and frightened, but understanding will come in time. Little did I know I had been birthed into the eye of a storm. I remained unaware as I sat safely in the calm center. This lasts for quite a few years. As my cognitive skills develop, the something else that occurred in utero begins to blossom. By puberty, I become fully aware of what exactly it is, and I am terrified. I had heard of it before, this terrible disease. I'm told it is a manifestation of Satan himself, pure evil growing within me. Innocence departs and my environment begins to shift as I come to realize that my life up until this point was just the calm before the storm. I hear a rumble in the distance, sounds reverberating from the Adam's apple of men much wiser than I, or so I thought. Adolescence is in full swing, and I hear other boys my age talking about girls, but I feel as though I cannot relate. The religious rhetoric imprinted in my brain continually reminds me of how sick it must really be. I must really be. It starts with a gust of wind, but soon becomes a gale, tussling the delicate strands of my psyche into a confused and tangled mess. As the years pass, the turbulence grows. The tectonic plates of my mental, spiritual, and emotional faculties, collide and grind into each other with great force, chiseling away at my self-identity. What is left is a worldwide that finds me hating who I am, along with many others that I will never meet. This is where the lies began. No one is born this way. And homosexuals are sinners and they will burn in hell. I am told that it is a matter of spiritual warfare and the two opposing forces are fighting for the fate of the souls of these depraved individuals. I had been socialized to see the lies as truth, and I did. I wanted to remain true to my religious faith and to the societal norms that I was expected to fit into. I wielded guilt and shame like a hammer, trying to repress my feelings with every swing, all the while trying to maintain the masquerade of normality. It was an arduous and exhausting task. I often crumpled to the floor like a pile of dirty laundry, crying out to the God of my youth, begging for him to take away this curse. Why, I would scream, no matter how hard I would try to change or how devoted to God I was, these obscene attractions persisted. I lived in a constant state of fear and turmoil, believing that if I died, I was destined to eternal damnation. The cyclone of pain was tearing its way through my inner self at dizzying speed. I made a decision. The only way to stay this impending evil was to deny that it even existed and to move forward with my life and start a family. I was sure this was the snake oil I was looking for. I assumed that if I found a woman and fell in love, that these desires would fade and be replaced with the right thinking. I remember the night I stole glances at Nadia from across the bonfire at a Bible study being held in a friend's backyard. I was taken aback by her beauty and grace. I still am. In a short time, we fell in love, and I knew she was the one with whom I would start building a life. We decided to remain abstinent from each other until our wedding night, not a difficult challenge for me, obviously. About a year later, we were married in an idyllic ceremony under an oak tree on my parents' property, complete with fireworks. Two young lovers, it was perfect. As we stood under that majestic tree, I looked up and admired its branches stretching heavenward and then outward in a wild sphere around us. I felt like a holy umbrella, and for a moment I felt safe. The storm was silent. As the night was winding down and guests were thinning, I knew that the time was coming for us to head out for our first home together and consummate our marriage. My nerves were electric, yet desire was absent. I remember her asking me to unzip her wedding gown, but as I did, I nervously glanced away from her. I tried to buy time by suggesting we open gifts first. She looked confused, but complied and offered some wine to lighten the mood. I downed a couple of glasses and relaxed a bit before heading into the bedroom. Nadia would tell you now that she knew something was clearly wrong when on the third night after our wedding, I informed her that we need not make love every night and suggested we read or watch a movie instead. This was the awkward start to our marriage, yet we didn't overanalyze anything at this point. Weeks later, Nadia was expecting our first child. Come summer, we were in the throes of parenthood. Flash forward to 7 years and we were the perfect family. On the surface, we were happy and contented with three beautiful children, two daughters and one son. Dig deeper and you would fall into the vast nothingness where passion and intimacy would normally reside in a healthy relationship. Let me be clear, our happiness was genuine and real, yet lacking a vital component needed for perfection. Over the course of our marriage, the reality settled in, and I realized that these feelings from my youth were not changing nor fleeting. The family we had created was supposed to be like a well-constructed shelter, keeping my dark secrets safely out of sight and out of mind. But the rumbling outside persisted, and the metal doors were beginning to rattle from the squall. As I stare up from the bottom of the stairwell, I seem to say repeatedly, echoing like a clanging cymbal. My hands reach up and cover my ears as I turn away to face the interior of the room, thinking I could ignore the persistent sound. My eyes adjust to the light of the sheltered space, and I see small cracks beginning to form on the walls, slowly advancing and expanding until they become large enough to slip into. The sound of concrete separating and breaking apart was deafening. Debris covers the floor. I frantically grab chunks of concrete and try to fit them into the gaps on the walls, hoping no one will see me. But they are like 1,000 puzzle pieces, and none of them are fitting together. I am overcome with a sense of helplessness. This is not how things were supposed to be. Marriage and family were supposed to change me, set things right. For years, I had believed that the feelings I struggled with were wrong and sinful. I did not ask for them, yet they remained ever present. What was I to do? I love my wife and my children. I love our life together. Its ups and downs have challenged me to be a better man. Aside from intimacy issues, Nadia and I have a steadfast bond. I love her like I've loved no one else. She's an incredible woman and an amazing mother. We love parenting our children together. We love spending time together, but life is like a river and time a current that always flows forward. The further we drifted downstream, the more apparent it was that Nadia was suffering. No matter how hard I tried, I could not love her the way a straight man could. She never understood why and always thought that something was wrong with her, despite my insisting otherwise. Her self-confidence was crumbling, and what was left was an insecure shell of a woman who was living a life in which her own husband did not have the innate desire to be with his lover. Like my inauthenticity was obvious to both, like my storm shelter, she was breaking apart. I wanted to want her intimately, but in all my efforts, the inauthenticity was obvious to both of us. I wanted to heal her hurts, but stitches and gauze only go so far. These temporary fixes were losing their effect, and we were both in need of a cure. It wasn't until about 6 years into our marriage that, after much theological study, I came to the place where I saw no conflict between homosexuality and Christianity. 6 months after that, I found myself analyzing the very core of my spiritual beliefs. After much reflection, I arrived at the conclusion that the idea of God is much broader than I had ever imagined. Christianity became a distant memory, and I was seeing the world through new eyes. I began to see how all of humanity is interconnected, and our religious and faith are just an expression of how we relate to the idea of something bigger than ourselves. Love replaced religion in my life, and I was developing a personal, moral, and ethical philosophy in which empathy and compassion were paramount. During this journey, I was learning to love others more fully, and in turn, I began to acknowledge who I truly was. The self-hatred started to fade away, and for the first time in my life, I accepted myself as a gay man. With eyes wide open, I recognized that something else that happened while I was still in the shelter of my mother's womb. I no longer saw it as a disease, but as a beautiful and perfect part of my very identity. Now I found myself facing the most difficult decision of my life: continue to hide and persevere in my marriage, or be honest with myself and to my family and face the coming aftershocks. I wrestled with this decision over the course of a couple of weeks. Up until now, I had been willing to deny my true identity to keep our family together. But after seeing how much this was hurting Nadia, the choice became obvious. I knew it was the only honorable choice to make, but I was afraid that she would be justifiably angry and was terrified for the futures of our children. The summer sun burned brightly as Nadia plucked weeds from the garden. I stood, leaned against the fence, watching and conversing. Soon we were arguing about our relationship and why there seemed to be this broadening discontent. She wanted to know where my passions lie and why, no matter how hard she tried, I did not appreciate her the way a husband should appreciate his wife. My chest was on fire with anxiety. The words to offer explanations to all of this were on my lips. But I glanced over at our daughter running around with a chicken tucked lovingly in her arms, and I couldn't get them out. Something is wrong with me, and I need to figure it out, I blurted. I remained silent from that point forward, and we continued our nightly routine of dinner, bathing the kids, and tucking them into bed in a quiet tension. After the little ones were asleep, we convened on the couch as usual. I tried to avoid the awkwardness by putting a movie on. Before the menu screen comes up, Nadia says, "You don't have anything else to say about our conversation today?" I stammer out generic phrases about needing time to figure out what is going on with me. She persists. I felt caught off guard. I was not prepared to come out to her yet, and I had no idea how to say it. "It seems like you have something you want to say." I'm staring blankly forward, seemingly emotionless. Yet my insides are twisting into knots as I feel the floor beneath my feet shake and hear the windows rattle in a panic as the storm begins to bill. "Just say it," she says with her hand on my shoulder. I continue to stare forward as my head shakes a constant no. The room is pulsing with flashes of lightning accompanied by violent crashes of thunder. The velocity is reaching a peak as I say, "You don't understand. This will change everything." The wind outside howls fiercely as she insists, "You have to say it, you have to." Time stands still for a moment as the roof detaches from the frame of our home and is lifted up into darkness. My lips slowly part open and the words spill out. Before I can even finish it, her arms are embracing me. I bury my weeping eyes into the collarbone of my best friend in the most honest moment of my life. She weeps with me. She weeps for me. We weep for our family. The storm has lifted and the stars are glinting above us on the clear night sky. We are looking up for the first time in years. We are able to see their beauty. We talk for hours. She expresses anger and frustration toward the environment that made me feel unworthy and degenerate my entire life. Her compassion wraps itself around me and mine around her as we begin to heal. We grieve the loss of our dreams together, but we know our children will grow up with parents who are honest about who they are. Our children will always know that they are free to be exactly who they are, and they will be met with love and complete acceptance. My children will never have to live their lives fostering a secret about their identity. My children will be immersed in an atmosphere that will encourage them to develop into confident, strong, empathetic and loving people. They will blossom, free from the shackles of fundamentalist religion and devoid of hateful bigotry. Homophobia has ravaged its way through my life like a tempest. It has buried its teeth so deep that I can feel that venom lingering on the nucleus of every cell of my body. It runs rampant in our society like a virus, spreading its sickness in every sanctuary and spawning hate with every foolish word spat from the pulpit. It is a force that no longer has any power over me. It is a force that must be addressed, resisted, and rooted out wherever it tries to spread. We must protect our children from such evil. This could have destroyed us, yet we stand amid the wreckage stronger than ever before. The burden of darkness has been lifted, and the lightness of liberation shines forth. We look ahead at the future together, us five. The dynamics of our family unit may be shifting, but we will always be a family. We will just be adding a couple of more members in the future. We know the road ahead is a precarious one, but we have love, and that is enough. And that was it. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it gives a very accurate portrayal of what goes on in the mind of when you bring it to light, what it's like to come to terms with it in a marriage. It's not easy telling someone. It's not easy. You know, it's not easy trying to hold up that facade of being gay. You know, being gay and trying to hold up the facade of being straight. And it's definitely not easy for the straight person to live that life with that person. It's not easy on either side.
Well, you know, I think that once again, it's it really expresses the battle and the struggle that so many men, gay men, go through.
Mm-hmm.
And in so many ways, I am really so sympathetic. I really am. But on the other hand, you know, I also look, you know, have to look at the other side because of the fact that, you know, I'm part of the group of women that has lived through this story.
Mm-hmm.
And while I do appreciate the fact that gay men do suffer and that it's, you know, terrible to have to live a life where you're brought up, to, you know, being told that there's something sick about you or you're deviant, you know, I can understand that. And even, you know, like a couple of my readers wrote in this week, and they were very distressed, even though they have gay husbands, and they were really distressed over the fact of the whole Chick-fil-A controversy. And, you know, one of my gay friends wrote to me, and he said, how do you think I feel knowing all these people are lining up, you know, thinking, you know, at Chick-fil-A to support them for his discrimination against gay people? And, you know, I guess I would feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly if it was something against Jewish people, and Chick-fil-A was saying, you know, something terrible about Israel, and, you know, of course, that's not what they would do, but I'm just kidding, theoretically. You know,
mm-hmm.
they would, and all people who agree with us line up and we'll give you, you know, to support us by buying food, and there were, you know, lines around the block of people. It wouldn't make me feel very comfortable or very happy. How do you feel about that, Misty?
Yeah, well, I think I'm just saddened when any entity takes a political or public stance on something such as that. You know, I do believe we live in a country, you have freedom to have your views, but I think you just have to be very careful when you speak them out. I mean, people are going to have personal opinions. We can't stop people from that. But when you speak them out, you have to be so careful because, you know, I've said stuff before and it came out in a totally different way than I meant for it to come out. And I'm trying to give a benefit of a doubt, and I'm certainly not taking up for Chick-fil-A. I'm not doing that. But I'm just saying, you know, just you have to be so careful of what you say because someone's going to be hurt when you say something, some type of derogatory statement that's specifically aimed towards some group of people. And it's just, you know, that's not for the public eye. If that's your personal opinion, that's your personal circle of friends or whatever. You know, it's just, I just don't agree. That's not how to live. That's not how to act. That's not, you know, we live in a time and age where things, all things should be equal. People should be perceived as equal, regardless of race, religion, sex, gender, all those things, you know. It's really, I don't know what we're coming to sometimes. Sometimes we step forward and a few steps back. I don't know.
Well, here's the whole thing. I really do appreciate where these guys are coming from. And, you know, I really, my heart does go out to them. But I think things kept getting messed up with this whole concept. So I just want to discuss this with you a little bit, Misty. When this gentleman, and once again, I really admire his courage and, you know, talking about his name's Christopher Cifolo, and I do admire the things that he said and his honesty, because a lot of guys would just dig deeper and bury it deeper and be in denial more. But at least, you know, he came out, he told his wife, you know, and he hadn't been out there, according to this article, running around. You know, so I admire all that. But when it comes to, you know, well, they were both frustrated in the marriage, you know. First of all, she should be frustrated in the marriage because she's married to a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I acted a lot of ways in my marriage to my gay husband that were not normal to the ways I would normally act. Did you find yourself that way too?
Well, absolutely, because you're not in a normal situation. I mean, it's not a normal situation. I'll never forget
one day, and I was having this conversation with somebody the other day, and I felt, like, embarrassed for saying this, but I'll never forget the day we were at a shopping mall, and I was just so beside myself because I was so emotionally broken down from my marriage, and I was really egging on my ex-husband. I was egging him on, hoping he would hit me. I wanted people to see that I was beaten up on the outside because they just couldn't see how beaten up I was on the inside. I mean, this is how ridiculous my life had been, that I had to start thinking, oh, why can't he just smack me in the face so people can see what he's doing to me? I mean, and I was just suffering so badly on the inside and felt so trapped. And, you know, I realize how women get so what I call stuck in the muck, where they can't make a move, they get paralyzed into inaction, because I saw how I was getting. And, you know, you get a guy who's strong and a woman who's mentally beaten down and now weakened, you know, there's a lot of fear factors that set in. You know, you lose your self-confidence. You don't think you're able to do for yourself. And I think that now you can attest to the fact, Misty, you've met somebody who's nice. I can certainly attest to the fact that I have a wonderful man in my life for so many years now, that you can see the difference on how things go in a relationship when a partner is straight. I mean, the issues you have with a gay husband are not the issues that you have with a straight man. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, there's certainly issues with a straight relationship. Certainly, there are their own set of issues. But when you have a relationship with a gay person, a straight person, it's just not, you can't compare it to a relationship with straight people in it. It's a very unique situation. Instead of using the word normal, I should have used the word unique. It's just a unique situation. It's very different than, you know, two straight people. It's totally different.
It's kind of like this. Let's say you're married to a gay man, and let's say you're trying to be the best loving wife you can be, because no matter what you do, it's never good enough. So let's say you go out of your way, you want to make a nice breakfast for your husband, hoping that he's going to face the day and feel happy about you, and maybe he'll feel happy enough that by the time he gets home at night, he'll even want to touch you or be intimate with you, because he certainly hasn't felt that way for the last few days, weeks, or months. And you really go out of your way, you make this really big, beautiful breakfast for him, French toast, bacon, everything, coffee, everything is ready, you know, when he comes down the steps. And like a straight man would say, honey, thank you so much, that's so great. And like a gay man, he's not saying, honey, thank you so much, that's great. He's pissed off because he doesn't even want to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's not expressing any kind of, you know, feeling good about it, and I'm going to really make this up to you. You really try so hard to love me. These guys aren't on the same page because they're not thinking about us. They're thinking about why are they in a situation where they don't want to be. They're thinking about men. They're thinking about how much different their life would be if they could be with a man. And that's not to say they want to live with a man. A lot of them want to remain kind of closeted, not out in public. But the point is that they're not appreciative to what we're doing, you know, because they're frustrated. And like you said, flash forward 7 years, we're the perfect family. On the surface, we are happy and contented with three beautiful children, two daughters and a son. Dig deeper and you will fall into the vast nothingness where passion and intimacy would normally reside in a healthy relationship. So, and he says, let me be clear, our happiness was genuine and real, but lacking a vital component needed for perfection. See, that's where I take issue with him, because where he says that, dig deeper, you'll fall into the vast nothingness where passion and intimacy would normally reside in a healthy relationship. But it's not just about that either. Like, these gay guys really don't understand this. He says that on the surface we were happy and contented with three beautiful children. You know, I don't think either one of them were really happy or contented when she's going to bed every night wondering, why doesn't my husband want to, you know, touch me? And he's going to bed thinking, what if she tries to touch me? How am I going to reject her? You know, I think this is not just a matter of sex, like a lot of times they want to make it, well, everything was perfect in our relationship except for the intimacy. Well, then nothing's perfect. Am I right or wrong about that, Misty?
Absolutely. It's, absolutely. That's very well put. I mean, it's horrible being on the straight side because you constantly have that nag and that tug at you wondering what's wrong or what have I done wrong? What have I done wrong in this situation? What can I do more? And that fosters that feeling of I'm not enough. And that's disastrous. It's disastrous in a relationship. And unfortunately, when you have a gay husband, usually, not all, but usually, that feeds into that vicious cycle because, you know, they are frustrated. They usually don't want to be there. And it's hard for them to be there as well, and they will feed with their comments will often feed into of, you know, fostering that woman of not being enough.
Excuse me, Misty. I think we have a call. Hold on one sec. Hello, this is Bonnie and Misty.
Hello, Bonnie and Misty.
Oh, Gail, you called in. We have Gail with us, Misty.
Hello.
I ran and got a phone card.
Oh, you're the best, Gail. I didn't even see you were on here until I just clicked in by accident and looked at our switchboard.
That's fine.
What a pleasure.
I knew you'd
figure
it out.
Here. So, everybody, we want to introduce you to our very wonderful friend, Gail, in Canada. Thank you so much, Gail, for calling in. And Misty and I were saying at the beginning of our broadcast how bad we felt that you couldn't join us tonight because of technical difficulties and how you've been an angel in helping so many people for us.
Mm.
Although you don't seem to believe that for some reason. But Gail is the most modest I've ever met in my life. But boy, you are like my soul sister for sure. You know, there aren't too many angels out there like you are. There's never a person that Gail won't be willing to help or go out of her way to give support to, and that was even while you're going through your own trauma. So, Gail, we're talking tonight a little bit. Gail is no longer in her marriage, right, Gail?
Correct.
But you were in there for a really long time, right?
Yeah, over 30 years.
That's a really long time.
Yep, it was.
I mean, that was like your whole adult life, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And can you tell people a little bit about your own story? You got married when you were young, is that right?
Well, I was, it depends on what your perception of young is. I was 26 going on 27 when
I got married. Oh, yeah, you weren't that young,
Gail. No.
Okay.
You
just
exactly.
looked young to me, so I was assuming you must have been a babe out of high school.
You're so sweet. Thank you.
That's what I thought.
No.
Okay, so Gail wasn't that young, but still back in those days, 30-some years ago, what did we know about gay, right?
I had gay friends,
uh-huh.
and gays were with gays. The gays did not marry. They just never married.
Uh-huh.
I never knew any gay men that were married. I knew gay people that were partners, but never to straight people. So I never even thought that my husband was gay. And I think for myself, I grew up in a dysfunctional alcoholic family, so I don't think I knew normal anyway.
And I think that's really an important point, Gail, because we have a lot of women who are in your situation. And, you know, Missy certainly has met a number of them as well. It always, you know, surprises us. You know, we meet women at our support, you know, healing meetings like we're having here in September in Philadelphia. But, you know, we met you in Florida and women in Houston, California, wherever I go. It's amazing that there's a pattern for some women where they've led these lives with dysfunctional parents, where there's alcoholism or mental health issues in the home or mental illness on the behalf of the parent. But a lot of times alcoholism and drug addiction. And so there is no sense of normalcy. Would you agree with that?
I agree, especially. I mean, I can speak, you know, for me. Looking back, definitely, I'm really convinced that for sure that is that upbringing. You don't know normal. You accept a lot of behavior that other people don't, but you don't socialize with the other people, shall I say. You socialize with people that are in the same predicament as yourself, so you really don't ever learn anything different. You just learn to survive and do the best you can with what you know, and I think it, you know, sets you up, at least for me, it set me up, I think, to be more than willing to look after somebody.
And I think that not only that, Gail, but sometimes you look at any situation as being better than your own situation. Is that possible, too?
Oh, for sure.
You know, that
a lot of women
leave home at an early age and get married.
Greener.
And they think, well I'm sorry.
I think, too, for myself, you know, coming on to 27, I thought, I mean, looking back, I definitely settled. And, you know, thought, well, this man says he loves me, and, you know, we dated for a couple of years, and...
It's not perfect, but no one's perfect, right?
Exactly. My life was, you know, not perfect.
Right, I didn't have a perfect family, and I survived it, and this guy's better than my family was.
Absolutely, and he's got a family, and they're still together, and, you know, like, and mine wasn't. So,
right, that's why I think that when you grow up in dysfunction, you know, you just look at life in a very different, distorted way. Because you're just so used to living it that way.
Exactly, and you don't know how distorted it is. I don't think
you
really...
So you met your husband, you spent a couple of years with him, and then you got married. And was it ever good?
Probably the first about 10 years. Yeah. During that time, I think that my ex-husband was trying the best that he could.
Did he seem happy? Or did you feel something was missing?
Not then, no. Not then.
Did he have children early on?
By the second year we were married, we had our first child.
How was your sexual relationship with him?
At the start, actually, it seemed pretty good. And he initiated, and I initiated. It didn't, you know. But as time went by, it got less and less and less until there was none. And he had health issues, which added to... You know, me thinking I was being selfish by even demanding any kind of anything, because he physically wasn't able, or I never even gave him the choice. I just thought he couldn't. I didn't even ask. I left it up to him. So, of course, it never happened.
And did you think that was strange?
Pardon?
Did you think that was strange?
Yeah, after a few years, I sure did.
But in your mind, did the word gay ever come to your head?
No. No. And to be honest, I mean, he did, looking back, of course, the hindsight I see now, but then I didn't. And I actually, I thought that I was quite blessed at this wonderful man that everyone around me thought was so wonderful picked me to marry him. And that's truly what I thought, which is kind of warped. Because that's how it felt.
So when does things start going progressively downhill?
After our last child was born.
Did you feel like an emotional distance from him?
Yes. And he had a heart attack at the age of 33.
Wow.
Which was pretty scary because, this is, you know, almost 30 years ago now. They didn't think people that age would have heart attacks. That wasn't, that just didn't happen.
Right.
But he did. And he's had probably 5 since then.
Wow.
So, of course, that adds to your mental state, his and mine, because you don't want to stress anybody out, right? That's your first...
Did he use that as an excuse?
Sorry. Go ahead.
Did he use that as an excuse of why he didn't want to have sex? You know, his heart situation?
I think what he ended up doing
Like, you know, sometimes guys will say, you know, well, I can't do anything because, you know, my heart condition.
I don't remember him saying that.
Yeah, we have a lot of women whose husbands use their health as the reason why they can't have sex.
It would just be, oh, I'm really tired, and I would just accept that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe.
So you kind of accepted by that point you had a non-sexual marriage, right?
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we were going to have any, it would be his initiation.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember one time trying and, you know, being bluntly told no.
Mm-hmm.
Just no.
Mm-hmm.
And I never, after that, I never initiated anything again.
Did you ever feel it was your fault?
At times, but then his drinking began to increase.
Uh-huh.
And progressed to total insanity, and I became crazy along with him. Because I definitely was affected, too. So,
well, it had to affect you with his drinking, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we do find that a lot of women have husbands that turn to alcohol and drugs. Because
mm-hmm.
they can't deal with who they are.
Exactly. And I, to this day, I mean, that's my story. I'm sure his is different, you know. And, I mean, somewhere along the line, he did have the courage to tell me he was gay. His training sucked, but he honestly told me. He didn't have to. I don't know.
Right, but that was somewhere along the line many years later, right?
Pardon me?
That was somewhere along the line many years later.
Mm. 28.
Right. That was a long time.
Yes.
And although, like you say, at least he told you so you don't have to wonder anymore, still all those years you had to suffer not knowing what was wrong, right?
Exactly. And there were times where I just shook my head because I didn't know. I just, you know, and lived with what I thought was just was alcoholism, and you know he was an alcoholic, and I guess I thought I should know how to live in that kind of marriage because I grew up in it. So.
And did you feel that since you grew up in it, you just have to live with it?
Pretty much.
So when did that change for you, Gail?
Well, the day he told me he was gay and in love with a man, in that moment I knew my marriage was not what I thought it was, and it would change. But then my craziness was to help him adjust to being gay, and for 2 years I did everything I could. Which in itself is crazy because it's his responsibility.
Well, if I think all of us have that enabling behavior pattern.
Mm-hmm.
This is why they pick us. You know, they know how we are. And that we're helpers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in our own sorrow and anguish, we still want to help them.
Oh, absolutely. I figured I'd survive, but I didn't know what was going to happen with him. And during that time, his drinking increased to, like, tenfold what it was. His health was horrendous. It was awful. Awful. And it was really hard at the same time to watch him do that to himself. And to me and to our kids. But mostly to himself. It seemed
your
like...
Your kids react.
Pardon?
How did your children react?
Well, they all know.
Right.
And they knew... It's something that... There isn't a lot of conversation about as far as their dad being gay. at the time, they were all very good on the computer.
Uh-huh.
I knew nothing.
Right.
And I knew nothing. And once I did know a little bit, then I found out more than I wanted to. But that was a few years after.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, they knew that someone in this house was gay by the gay porn sites that were in the history on the computer, which, of course, I had no idea, nor I really didn't care about the computer. It didn't matter to me. I was too busy doing other things to spend hours on a computer. So I just never did.
Do you think your sons were thinking it was each one of them that was doing this?
Yep.
I mean, it's all
they
funny.
They were wondering, but slowly as each of them left home, the porn sites were still here.
Mm-hmm.
So they figured it out.
Uh-huh. Now they figured it out before you knew about it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they did, but I don't think they never said anything to me, and I think when they actually really figured it out was pretty close to when my ex told me.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, his behavior got more bizarre, and he totally refused to talk to them.
Uh-huh.
Out of fear. Fear they would disown him, have nothing to do with him, never speak to him again, never, you know. And I disagreed. But I couldn't convince him. And finally, they approached me. I didn't tell them.
No, you didn't at all.
No.
I mean, you really, like you said, had to do this your own way. And I tell that to women. You know, no two women feel the same exact way or have to do things in the same exact way, right?
Exactly. You have to do what feels right for you.
Right. And you have to do what you can live with.
Exactly. Exactly. And, yeah. So they did each come and talk to their dad at different times within a short period of my actually youngest son coming to me and asking me. That was hard.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that, you know, they probably knew before you on some level.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you say, kids are very sophisticated today. You know, with the computer.
They're amazing.
Aren't they?
Absolutely. If I don't know what to do with the computer, I go find one of them.
And
the young ones, it's second life to them.
Mm-hmm.
But
so many women have told us that their children knew before they knew because of the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they felt so bad because, you know, their children were keeping the secret from them. But
mm-hmm.
the children feel so torn, you know, and it really does affect the children. You know,
absolutely.
I think that men don't understand this fact. You know, once their secret's out, how does that child deal with it? Does he feel guilty to have to tell the mother? He doesn't want the family to break up. You know, that child goes through so many issues on their own of guilt.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, as you know, in my situation, it wasn't not accepting that my husband was gay. I got that.
Uh-huh.
What I couldn't understand, and to this day still don't, is, I guess, his inability to accept himself. And,
well,
you know, how he treated me and well, especially me at that time because the kids had left home. But, you know, for 2 years it was total insanity.
Uh-huh.
And it took me 2 years to finally say enough is enough. I can't do this anymore. This is awful.
And he was at the point of bringing people into your house, right?
Yes, he did. Did I ever confront him? No. I did.
Well, what would be the point?
Well, that's kind of what I thought. It doesn't matter.
You knew what was going on, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
And a lot of times they would lie anyway.
And well,
that's why I tell women you have to trust yourself, your instinct, your eyes, your smell. I mean, because these guys are never going to admit to it.
Well, and I never did ask him. He pretty much left it right on the computer for me. Self-fulfilling prophecy. I think he really, you know, wanted someone to make a decision, and he couldn't.
Uh-huh.
And I did. And, you know, I mean, he did agree to leave, and, you know, that part, he could have made my life a lot more. I could have went through a lot more misery.
Uh-huh.
You know, and for 8 months after we agreed, over 8 months before he finally got his own place and left, yeah, that took a lot of patience.
Well, he could have made your life more miserable, but he certainly could have made it a lot better.
Absolutely.
You know, he was selfish, self-serving. Excuse me. And so, you know, he spent all those years making you miserable. And even in the end, he just, you know, had to prolong the inevitable. But, Gail, I would like for you to encourage some women who really, you know, feel hopeless because they're living in situations where they don't see a light. And when I first met you, you felt that way too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And all I could think about was him, what I
mm-hmm.
could do for him, what I could get you to do for him,
uh-huh.
what we could, you know, counseling, whatever. Because I was convinced if he could accept himself, I knew we wouldn't stay married, but then he'd
uh-huh.
be okay and I'd be okay.
Uh-huh. But it was a long road that you traveled.
It wasn't, I have learned that my happiness and is my own responsibility. It's not up to another living soul to make me happy.
Well, I think that's the main important message. I know that you went to Al-Anon meetings, correct?
Oh, yes, many. And I still do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe I've been affected my whole life. And, yeah, without your encouragement, I probably would have never went. And I appreciate and thank you for that. And I'd also like to give a big thank you to Misty, because her vision boards were my start
mm-hmm.
as well. And,
can you talk a little bit about the vision boards, Misty?
Absolutely. And maybe Gail can tell us a little bit how it helped her. A vision board, when I work with the women, is basically you take old magazines from wherever, the library or ones you have, and you just thumb through them, and you look for things that you wish to bring into your life to make it very simplistic. And you glue those or pin those or tape those onto a board, and you place them in a position where you can see them daily, multiple times daily. And, you know, believe it or not, it helps you focus. There's really no magic to it, but it does bring some magic into your life because it helps you focus. And focus is a key to moving forward and attempting to get unstuck in life. And all the women that I can convince to do it really have wonderful things to say about it. And Gail, maybe you can tell us a little bit how it helped you or what it did for you.
No. I still have many boards. Now mine are pictures of my grandkids and poems that mean things to me and friends and places I enjoy and like. it's much more positive. But when I started my first little bitty board, because that's all I could afford, but it had one side that was like a whiteboard so I could write on it, and one side corkboard. And I remember Misty telling me, and in Al-Anon hearing, that we all deserve respect and dignity. And so that was the first thing I wrote up there. We all deserve respect and dignity, including me, I added.
Good.
And so that was the first line on that board. Then as time and pictures of my grandkids, my one granddaughter I had then, and I spent a lot of time with her. So I've just slowly added sayings, poems, words that speak to me. I've got a picture from Florida. Now, I keep my one board with my sayings and what's personal and private to me in my bedroom. So it's the last thing I see at night and the first thing I see in the morning. And I read it every day.
And do you feel that helps you?
Oh, absolutely. It certainly did at the start because I was such a confused mess. I couldn't focus for 2 seconds. By the time I'd get from one room to the next, I'd be upset. I couldn't, you know, and I couldn't find any kind of self-worth. I couldn't understand why this happened to me and how did I allow this and what could I do to help my husband and such confusion and such pain and what about my kids and, you know, it was just crazy. I was insane. And as Misty says, I was in that big circle of crazy dancing and I couldn't see a way out of it. So for that, to have one thing I could look at to make me focus for 2 seconds.
Absolutely.
Help.
And that's why I think all these exercises are so important. And it sounds like a little thing, but when you're, like I say, lost in the forgotten world of doom, any kind of positive imagery is so helpful to you if you can pick out places where you want to go that you think you'll never get to. Or, you know, even if it's positive words, like Gail said, cut out words that reflect how you want to feel. And little things like this that you can do every day and wake up and see these words or see these pictures and realize there's a way that's a better way than the one you have now, and you just have to get to that goal line. And Gail, I mean, I know that you're always honest and sharing. It did take you a long time to get there. Right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, it was like a 3-year journey from the time we started talking. And, you know, the important thing is that I would never give up on Gail because I just wanted her to be happy. And I tell our women, you know, it's not a contest. You just have to get to the finish line. And you have to see there's a line to cross over, and if it takes a year, 2 years, 5 years. I had one woman who had a 5-year plan, and she stuck to that plan. On that day to get out, she was out. But it wasn't a day sooner or a day later. It was on that day. That was her plan. And that's the plan that she had to keep working with because, you know, she had put it on her calendar. And I said, wow, 5 years, it's a long time. But whatever it takes, you know, because I always say you have to be emotionally free first before you're physically free.
Yeah.
And if you keep staying in the muck, you're never going to be totally free. But at least, you know, you have a game plan, you can get out. But Gail was just, you know, so persistent that she wanted to take her life back. And, you know, she did whatever step she had to take to get there. And that's what I admired so greatly about you, Gail, that no matter how hard that struggle was and no matter what you had to put up with, you refused to give up. You kept, even if it was at a slower pace, moving forward, you never slipped back.
It was slow for a while. Oh, my goodness, it was very slow. then I just kept, I just knew. I don't know how I knew, but I knew that at some point he would leave. And maybe it came when I quit caring if he left or not. And I quit nagging on him, and I quit, you know, did you find a place? Have you looked here? Have you looked there? I quit all that. It was his responsibility. You know, and I just reminded him once, probably 2 months, 3 months before, I just looked at him and said, you are not going to live in this house another year. I can tell you that. You probably won't live here 6 months. So I would suggest you find someplace because this is not going to continue.
Yeah, because for a long time, you know, you were ready for him to leave and he didn't feel like going, right?
Pardon me?
I said for a long time you were ready for him to leave, but he didn't want to leave.
He was, well, he, exactly. He wasn't making the effort.
Right, he wasn't rushing to get a place.
No. But he was at one point certain that I should go get an apartment. He was even looking for ads in the paper for me. And that's one thing with Al-Anon. I decided I wanted my house. It was my house, too. And why should I give up everything when I did nothing wrong? And I don't know why that stayed in my mind. Maybe because he has a higher paying job and is, you know, it would be easier for him than it was for me.
You know,
at
what?
First I wanted us to sell our home. He would have no part of that. None. Wouldn't even hear of it. Wouldn't talk about it. Wouldn't, you know. And you can't list a home if the other person disagrees. I checked that out. Couldn't do it.
Yeah, same thing around here. I know,
you know,
in Canada,
and of course,
it's similar,
I mean,
to here.
And that is right. A person shouldn't be able to sell a home from someone else's, you know, out from under your feet. But I think it was just because he was so quick to do that, it made me angry, and I thought, screw you. Which is a terrible thing to think, but why should I go?
Well, I agree with you. Why should we have to give up anything? You know, this is one of my big arguments that, you know, we go into these marriages with love and understanding, and all we want is a wonderful, you know, life to make with someone. But, you know, why do we have to be the ones to give up anything when we've given everything? I don't understand that.
It is.
Do you agree with that?
It is what it is. You know, I don't know if there's a right answer to that. Tell you.
Yes, there is. Here it is. It's wrong. Women shouldn't have to pay for something that they had no, you know, say in. And they suffered all this time. That's why, you know, one of the things I really want to work on is your fault divorce. You know, I'm not saying the men went in with bad intentions, but they went in knowing there was something not right.
I really believe that in the separation and divorce, it could be much better. Absolutely.
Women should not have to pay for anything. You know, this is a man's, you know, problem. She didn't do anything to create it. She didn't make it happen. She didn't make it worse. You know, if anything, her life is now going to be tumbling over, or has been for years in many cases. Why should the woman not end up with what she had? I don't get it. I mean, why should these guys, like we have one of our wonderful support group members, her husband's suing her for alimony. I mean, he's out there cheating on her with men, and he wants alimony. I mean, when I hear things like this, you don't know how it really makes my blood boil. It really does. I think that women really are not handled properly through this whole process. And like
I think
that, you know, I am really sympathetic towards the struggle for gay men coming out, but I'm not sympathetic to the struggle of how they help, you know, treat their wives after they come out.
I agree with that.
To be emotionally and financially responsible to these wives, don't you think so?
I definitely think that they should work harder at it, that's for sure.
Right.
Absolutely. But I also see, I think, even in straight marriages, women in divorce still get the crappy end of the stick there, too.
Oh, yeah, they do.
In a lot of situations. And you just know if it was the other way around, it wouldn't be that way. Men
see,
would
the
never
only thing
tolerate
is that
it.
In a straight marriage, people can argue, well, it takes two to make a marriage. And you know what? Maybe some of that is true. But in these marriages, it only takes one to ruin a marriage. And the other one is just trying endlessly to make it work. But we have no control over why it's not working. So I think even though there are bad straight marriages, it's a different dynamic at the end. Sometimes I'm a big believer in divorce, for any kind of couples that aren't working.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because you have a gay husband. I believe that in the quality of life for people, and I do believe that marriage is, an amazing, wonderful thing, but once it stops working, it's over. Move on. Go find another soulmate. You go
mm-hmm.
through life one time. You don't want to have to be stuck in a situation that's just existing when you want to live.
Well,
but
and
with
I
these husbands, once again, you don't even have a chance. It's not even a fair chance. You're not in the same race. You're in a totally different race.
That's
true. In a three-legged race, and he's in a two-legged race. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're not even in the same ballpark or playing the same game, for that matter.
That's
How do you
true.
Feel about that, Misty? Misty? Sometimes I wonder if Misty is having trouble with her line, because...
I could hear some clicking and stuff.
No, not even with us anymore.
Hmm.
She left this whole thing in our lap, Gail.
There you go.
Yep, I know that Misty's having problems with the mountains of Kentucky. But I don't know if you know, have you heard Misty last week or you had a chance, but here comes Misty now. Let's see. Misty, are you back because I'm talking about you?
I'm back. I got disconnected just as you were. I think you were asking me a question.
I was asking you, Misty, but now I'm moving on to your love life.
Okay.
And I was telling Gail about it.
Oh, okay.
Gail, do you know Misty has a nice boyfriend now?
I heard that. Isn't that fantastic?
Yes.
I think that's just great.
Were you rooting for that guy,
right?
Misty?
I didn't hear you. What?
Were you cheerleaders for your boyfriend?
Absolutely.
Gail and I are so happy that you finally found a good man who's good to you.
Yeah, they are out there. They are. You have to go through a few. If you to find them, they are out there. Be patient. They are out there. And, and if nothing else, be ready to dump them if they're not and go on to the next one. Don't settle. I tell women all the time, don't settle. If someone's not right for you, you know it pretty early on. Pay attention to those red flags and move on.
I think that one thing all of us have is tremendous inner strength. And,
mm-hmm.
I said this for Gail for all these years, that she's put up with the worst adversity of Misty. You were in a horrible situation for a long time also. And it's really true that, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Because
mm-hmm.
you may be stronger in different ways. Gail may be quieter, but Gail is strong.
Absolutely.
And Misty's very strong, too. And I'm strong, too. So the thing is that I think that we all gain some kind of inner strength. I feel bad. I think Gail can attest to this, too. Misty's been away from our chat room for a while. But, Gail tries to get there whenever she can. But, Gail, doesn't it hurt, when we see all these women just coming into this now?
Oh,
and we wish
man,
we could hold their hands and, dry their tears when they're telling us they can't, believe this or in such shock. How are they ever going to survive this? And I say we all go through this. But I know it is a long process. And in the beginning, I just was crying all the time.
Oh, that's all I did.
I was just crying all the time. I was so miserable and so upset with this. And, you know, you wish you could tell someone it's going to be okay. I mean, even now, as I, you know, we're sitting in this chat, I get an email from someone, you know, who writes to me. And, I mean, this is very typical of what people write to me, and I really hate to write back to them. But they say, Bonnie, I'm looking at a support group with wives, with, you know, gay husbands. It's very overwhelming. Bottom line is I love him, and I'm not leaving. You know, I need some support. Okay. You know, you know, I feel
wrong
so bad when I have to tell them, well, guess what? I can't give you support for that because it's just not going to be working. You know,
well,
just,
and it goes back to empowerment to women.
Well, I think you have
to
empower yourself, but I think you have to also accept that there's only so much you can do. You can't change gay.
No.
No matter how hard you want to try, it's not going to change. And
no.
I think all of us did our best to try to make these men love us so they wouldn't be having those sexual thoughts about other men. But it just doesn't work. And Misty, you know, you're younger than me. You could be my daughter. But the bottom line is this. You're in a relationship now with a straight guy. Isn't it so different? You don't have to watch every little thing you say, what is he going to think, watch every action, is he going to reject me? I mean, doesn't it feel like a whole new life?
It is a whole new life, and not only is it a whole new life, it's just, it's so unbelievably different when you're with someone that you can trust again. Because that's the big thing that comes up with women that I work with, women that you work with, and Gail, the women that you've inspired so much, is it's the big trust issue. And it's just so wonderful when you can, can open yourself up again to trust someone. Because trust is damaged. I mean, truly it's damaged. Because when you're with someone that lies about the very core being of who they are, whether intentionally or unintentionally, when you're, you know, upon marriage, it's just something really, really hard to break through. Trust is not an easy thing to regain. And, you know, in yourself. So that's the huge difference, is the trust issue of trusting yourself to move into a relationship again. And, you know, I have been in another relationship since my divorce, but this one's very different. This one's hugely different. And especially from, you know, the straight men I've been in relationships with since the divorce, because even with some of the straight men I've been with, it's just, you have to watch what you say, watch what you do, because there's many broken straight men out there as well. So it's just, but when you get with the right person, things are just so different. Things are not as complicated. You know, things, it has some simplicity with it that's very welcome. You know, it just really is a good thing.
Gail, do you have any fears about future relationships?
Yeah. Trust.
I mean, what would
real.
Be the first issue that it would scare you most of all?
Trust.
Yeah, I think that's one that all of us have for a long time to come. I mean, it was a long time for Misty to really get involved in a new relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Misty?
Absolutely. It was post-divorce. It was, and most women cringe when they hear this. I think it was about 3.5, it was over 3 years, somewhere over 3 years, 3 to 4 years. And it wasn't a very long-lived relationship, but it was good just getting back in to a relationship, and it served its purpose. It didn't last long, and then after then, it was, I dated just a little bit more, not much, and it's slow getting back into the process. It really is slow, and be patient with yourself. I think you really have to listen to yourself. Everyone's different. Be really careful if you try to jump in, I think, before a year. I took a little longer than most people take. And Bonnie, I know you say you took longer than most people take as well. But I think really wary if you jump in before a year, because it takes a while to heal. I think you're the best indicator, being, you know, yourself, of when you've healed enough to re-enter. But just be really careful not to enter too quick, because they do more damage than good. I'm not saying not have fun, not go out with people. I'm not saying like that, but just be careful if you're quick to jump into a relationship and have a lot of unhealed issues, you're also going to be quick to pick out people that may be the same thing that your ex-husband has done. They may be straight, but they still may be very broken straight men that will do very similar things and have very similar issues as the person you're with.
Right, because, you know, there are so many straight men out there who are losers and predators.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my whole new book, Man Readers, you know, A Woman's Guide to Dysfunctional Men, really will teach you about the horrible dysfunctional men that are out there. Because I still say, and I know women sometimes cringe a little bit when I say this, but I don't care. You know, the truth of the matter is we're broken women for the most part. Either we came into these relationships broken or we became broken during these relationships. But we're not coming out unscathed, no matter how you want to look at it. If you want to tell me you were mentally healthy before this relationship, you were, you know, at your best, and this relationship just, you know, dragged you down, but you were fine before, okay, well, you're scathed now. And the same thing is, you know, you grew up in dysfunction like Gail did and so many of our other women, so we were willing to settle, like Gail says. We were willing to settle for less than what we deserved just because we felt it was something to settle for. That somebody loved us, somebody wanted us, somebody promised us a happy future, and maybe they had some warts or some, you know, things that weren't quite right. But that's okay, they loved us, and that's all we needed to hear. And then, you know, I really feel that so many of us have low self-esteem, starting with me. I consider myself queen of low self-esteem. But, you know, of course, that changed over time only because I have, you know, somebody who's wonderful who makes me feel wonderful and beautiful all the time, even if I'm not. That's what counts. You know, the thing is that even if I feel good on the outside, I can feel start feeling better on the inside. And, you know, your self-esteem is really what the issue is, feeling good about yourself. And when you've been knocked down by men who make you feel that you're worthless or undesirable or that you can't be intimate with them because you're not good enough for them, I mean, it just takes so much out of you. So I think trust is the major issue that women find when they start meeting people again. Is this guy telling me the truth after all? How could I trust my judgment? The last guy I married was a gay man, and I couldn't figure that one out. What's wrong with this one? And, you know, there are some good men, like Misty says. I mean, I'm not saying anybody's a perfect man, but there are some wonderful, kind, loving men, and, you know, they're real functional. You know, they don't have to be perfect, but you can have a life with them. But then there are those men out there who are just predators, and in so many different ways. They're sociopaths, narcissists, emotionally controlling. I mean, all kinds of men out there. So I can see where women have to be careful, and you just can't keep falling in love and trusting men and getting screwed over time and time again. I mean, I have a woman who's part of the support network. She was married 3 times already to men who are horrible, and she's a beautiful woman. I love her. She's beautiful inside and outside, and yet she always picks the worst men. And they're not all necessarily gay, but there's something wrong with them sexually. So I can see, Gail, where trust is going to be an issue, but it's something that someday, hopefully your soulmate is out there, because some lucky man hopefully will find you. You know, you're such a prize package in every possible way. I don't even know a man good enough for you, Gail.
Oh,
you're going to probably have problems finding one.
Thank you.
Really, you're like an angel.
Mm.
Into everybody's life you come into.
Well, thank
right,
you.
Right, Misty?
Absolutely. I agree with everything you just said about that. That's so true.
I have good mentors.
Well, thank you, Gail.
Misty.
You made a really good point on that. So anyway, Gail, I don't want to keep holding you up with your court, but I thank you so much for joining us tonight, for inspiring us, and you really must do this every few months.
People need to hear your
voice and hear your inspiration and hear how you can overcome any kind of adversity when you want to be happy. And I think that's really what it comes to. If every day you wake up in the morning, you say, I want to be happy. I deserve to be happy. You know, in time, in a few weeks, you're going to start believing you do deserve it. And what can you do to become happy? You know, it's a process. Like Gail says, it doesn't happen overnight, but you plan it. You know, you emotionally put yourself ready for it, and then you can do it.
And it
is a process. So, Gail, do you have any final words you would like to say?
It truly is a process, and I think sometimes any of the ladies that I write to, they're so harsh on themselves, and they you know, beat themselves up because. And I don't know how you can beat yourself up for something you never knew. Now
that
you know.
That's a really good point. You never knew it. Why are you being so hard on yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, and it takes time to adjust to all of that. It's, you know, and I don't care whether you found out accidentally or your husband told you, you still go through, at least I sure went through the same emotional roller coaster I think most women have expressed to me.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it just, I think too, sometimes, I don't know, for me, I just kept doing one day at a time. And I can start my day anytime. If the first part of it sucks, I can change my attitude and we're going different from here.
Well, that's what beautiful thoughts to leave us with. So, Gail, thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's been such a pleasure getting you on here. We'll get you on here again by hook or by crook, and if we have to kidnap you from Canada.
You just have to come to Canada, Bonnie.
I know, Gail, you know, I'm not out of my comfort zone, out of my zip code, but you never know. Maybe I can meet you halfway.
Okay.
Is halfway Idaho?
Yeah.
Or maybe like some...
Idaho or Montana.
Or North Dakota or someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll talk about that someday. All right, Gail, well, we love you. Thank you again.
Love you, Gail.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I am so grateful to the two of you and the support and all the other ladies that have been in the support chat room for the last, 5 years at least.
At least. Thank you for giving back so much when you come into our chat room with your good advice, your warm heart, and your always all of your support. You know, so many women appreciate you.
Well,
so we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
All right.
Be kind
we love
to yourselves.
Okay. All right. We love
Bye.
You.
Thank you.
Love you too.
You.
Love you too, Misty. Bye.
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 Wasn't that wonderful that Gail was really able to finally call in?
Absolutely. Thanks to my great technical difficulties. I'm so glad because it's a lot that she made it in. She's helped so many women. I mean, I can't even begin to count the women I know of that she's helped.
She's still helping them
every
day.
So many
getting
women.
Letters from people about her.
She's such a delight. Such a delightful lady with so much love in her heart.
Well, Misty, I just want to mention to women if they're listening to please keep in mind that September 1st, I will be in New York City with my girlfriend Jody, and we will be there to meet other women from our Straight Wives Network. And we'll be having a very nice few-hour dinner together in New York City. So if you live in the tri-state area, Connecticut, New York, or New Jersey, and you'd like to join a wonderful group, we have a lot of fun at these New York get-togethers. You know, please let me know at bonk@aol.com. And also, if you're interested in my September healing weekend, September 29th and 30th, please also drop me a line and I'll send you the details. My healing weekend is a free weekend. You just have to pay for your hotel room and food. And that's my donation to all of our women to help them on their road to healing. It's always extremely supportive for women to meet other women and hear their stories. That starts the healing process. And it's just a wonderful event every year that somehow I'm still doing. So please get in touch at bonk@aol.com. So, Misty, I want to wish you a lot of love this week.
Thank you, and you as well.
And a lot of lust this week, too.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's even better, I think.
I think that might be better.
I hope you have a wonderful week, and I hope all of our straight wives, wherever you are throughout the world, thank you for listening to us and inspiring us to keep going on. And we plan to keep bringing you this show week in and week out. So, we'll talk to you again next week. Misty, I'll let you say the words first.
Good night and love to all, and good night and love to you as well, Bonnie.
Thank you, Misty. I love you, and love to everyone else who's listening. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Hello?